Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference. You can find more podcasts like this by visiting www.educause.edu/podcasts or subscribe to our iTunes feed by searching for EDUCAUSE. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference. Participants include John M. Morris, Director of Academic Technology Innovation at Drexel University, Kevin L. Reeve, Senior Instructional Designer at Utah State University, and Michael Ellis Schuerman, Associate Vice President for Instructional Technology Support at Drexel University. The session is entitled, Many Schools, One Lecture Capture Solution, How Drexel and Others Found a Technology That Actually Gets Used.
Due to technical difficulties, we join this session in progress.
As I was doing a presentation to some faculty on a podcasting workshop on my campus, one of the things we've been using that you saw up there was Adobe Connect. And if you're familiar with that product to capture lectures and to do, well, we use it to capture lectures. We also do it to offer a lot of distance ed courses to students. And we've been using that. But one of the professors in biology who uses it, he told me the reason he had come to this is he wanted to learn more. His students were asking him for portable media, meaning media that they could download to their portable video iPods or MP3 players. And that was one of the key things that they wanted. They wanted lectures online. They really like them. We asked some students to write some letters that were in another biology class in support of what we were trying to do to get an enterprise lecture capture system. And we had students in there who told us they watched, we had one student in particular say they watched them 4 and 5 times, many of the lectures 4 and 5 times, the same lecture. Another student told us it's nice to go to class and not have to just write notes as fast as I can. I can actually enjoy the class, be immersed in the class and the classroom experience, and then go back and fill things in. So we're seeing trends, at least at our university, that this, by many students, that they want this. Okay, here's what IT wants, and that's what I'm part of. We like to have things that, for one, are affordable. If you stop by the TechSmith booth and saw the pricing for this, it's impressive. It fits into our existing infrastructure. It works with our, you know, LDAP authentication system that we already have in place. It goes on our servers that we already have in place. We don't have to get something different. Minimal impact on our IT staff as far as server administration and training. I like this because it's click and you're going, and it's click, click, and you're done. And the ability to grow the system. This is what's one of the key things I see personally, is that we can start very small and grow the system as needed. And again, just works. IT wants it to work too, just like the faculty and the students. All right, how Relay works. Did anybody stop by and actually see this in action? A few of you did. Okay, then I'll explain how it works. With Relay, like, you have a client that sits on your desktop, and they have both a Mac and a PC client. Okay, it's really cool. It's a really small client. You sit, you launch it, and you use it to record your lecture. Now, it records locally on your local machine. And what's really cool about that, if there's problems in the internet connection, you don't need to be connected via IP to the internet in order to capture. You can capture locally to your machine. You do that. Once you're done capturing, it sends it from your machine in the background to a server, the Relay server, where it is then processed based on a profile you've created that for that particular faculty member. And so you can see the various types of files that you have that you can produce. And that was one thing that's intriguing to us. It's not a proprietary format, and we can choose the output that we use on our campus. And one of the trends I'm seeing is that MPEG-4, MPEG-3 and Flash Video are the trends for digital media, and we can thank Apple and YouTube and Adobe for a lot of that. Okay, and people who bought millions and millions of iPods have set the trends of what the future of video is. You can also see you can do Windows Media and others. The final thing that happens is the publishing, and this is a very open architecture. What does that mean? You're not You don't have to publish to something that you're not used to. You can, once it's recorded, uploaded to the server, and then munched to the file format you want, or formats. You can do multiple formats. You can choose all of those formats. It then puts it somewhere. And there's also XML data that can travel with that file. So if you've already got a publishing system somewhere already on your campus for media and metadata, there's a little XML file that will travel with it, so you can then use that to determine where to put it. But you can SFTP it to a site. You'll notice that there is a link for Blackboard, which in the Blackboard Classic product will send an announcement to the students. You can, you know, put it up to iTunes U University. It publishes up to a course in iTunes University if you have it, and that can be protected, so you know only students in your class can get at it. And you can also publish to TextMathScreencast.com. That's a service that they offer for files on the thing. Okay. All right. This is the interface here. It's really really simple. Basically, what you do is you launch this, you log in, you choose your audio, whether it's coming in via USB or mic or line input, and then there's that big red record button, and you hit record. Okay. Once you hit record, you get this little window that gives you a countdown, and if you saw right before I started, we actually are recording this session with it. It gives you a little 3, 2, 1, and then that thing disappears and goes down to the window. And then when you're all done, the thing I really like about it is you can sit there and hit the play button and play it back. So let's say you're in the lecture hall, you're done, you hit stop, you give it a little bit of metadata, and then you hit that big button, publish, and it sends it in the background to the server. Let's say you shut your laptop down and went back to your office. When you relaunch your laptop, it'll continue uploading that file. Or if you've got a permanent computer in the classroom, if another faculty comes in and is using it to lecture capture, it'll just watch CPU times and it'll just upload in the background. It's pretty slick how it works. It isn't reliant to record. The thing I like most is if my IP connection goes down, internet connection, I'm still recording and I'm doing it just fine.
All right, so I work at NJIT and we've been using Relay now for a little over a semester and we've been very happy with it. One of the reasons that we went with Relay was because we have a lot of millennial students and they really demand access to videos. When I say video, I don't mean video of a talking head. What they want to see are visuals. They want to hear the voice. We just did a millennial session previous to this and we did focus groups with our students and they all said, what I want is to go to iTunes U, get my lectures. I want to be able to re-record things. I want to be able to hear segments from other professors so that if I don't understand mine, I can go to another segment that someone else did and listen to it. They said that would keep them from having to go to classes they weren't enrolled in to try and get the material. So what we wanted to do was look at Relay as a solution to that. Before that, we were doing all videotaping. We were doing a lot of Camtasia Studio. We were using Audacity, or we were using Profcast for the Mac users. And we were doing that to try and get our podcast to put everything in iTunes U. So since we were the iTunes, we're a big iTunes U school, we figured this is the easiest way. They hit record. They don't have to know what to output the settings as. It automatically goes into their iTunes course. So it goes, publishes right to our iTunes site. It's wonderfully easy. The student subscribes to a podcast. What they'll do is when they launch iTunes, it'll automatically download the new one. The instructor doesn't need to think about anything. The IT staff doesn't have to do anything other than set one little parameter in the beginning of the semester, and it'll just go there. So this is the easiest solution, and this creates, the podcast with virtually no need for us to intervene, which we really liked. If you have any questions, feel free to ask them. The second option that we have is, we have certain courses where they're not associated with the recording is not associated with an actual class. For example, we have a metabotics program where high school teachers from around the state come to learn how to work with the Lego robots. And what we found was that we were recording our audio. We weren't recording our audio. We were doing these presentations in the summer. And then believe it or not, when the school semester started, they would sort of have a hard time remembering exactly what they talked about months ago. So what we decided to do was record these this summer with Relay so that the teachers could then go back and listen to things just in time as they need it. So that's not something that we wanted to put in our public iTunes face. So what we also do sometimes is just dump it into a FTP site. And what happens is we have Relay published right to that directory associated with their name. And when it's done, the instructor gets an email. The instructor could then pop that email into a Moodle course, and the users could just go in and get it, or they could email their user. So it's nice. They just get the link. They get the URL. They can just put it in Moodle. They could distribute it that way. There's, again, very little work that we have to do. And these are for the people that like to keep everything in the learning management system. It just goes in right there as a link. Now, we have a sort of a super geek that has been using Relay and sort of administrating it. And he's never really happy to just leave things simple. And I mean that in a very good way. So does anyone know what Drupal is? Okay, he would be so excited to see all these hands. I have his name there because you would probably make him the happiest man on campus if you'd call and talk to him about Drupal. So what he wants to do is create basically a YouTube site for our Drupal videos. So what we do with this is Relay publishes directly to Drupal. Drupal creates a page just like YouTube, and I'll show you an example of that. And the videos all get tagged on that page based upon the XML file, the data associated with that audio. And what happens is he can then have Drupal email people who are subscribed or in a course or associated with that to let them know that a video has been added, which they like to get in their email. They can go to the site and they can watch it without anything. And then what they can do is also choose to use that XML feed to publish to iTunes if they want, or to publish to other, you know, podcast aggregators so that they could get it there if they don't want to go to Drupal. And what he wants to do is take this, and he's also got the goal where you can go through this XML and you can sort and search and find everything as an administrator. So that's something that's going to be transparent to the end user. But for him, he can use this for managing so that he has an alternative way to manage everything as opposed to going through the Relay site. And he can also stream it if he chooses to, so that students don't have to download the file entirely before they can start watching. So what our goal is, if this works right, is we want to submit it back to the Drupal community so that other Relay users can just plug and play this. And this is what it looks like when it's plugged in. It looks just like a YouTube. This is our Drupal site. It's embedded in the page. They can go in and play it. And that's the link if you want to see our site. So we want to talk a little bit about how we're actually using it. One of the best things that we've come up with is we're working with the Tutoring Center to create learning objects, short learning objects, for our barrier classes, our remedial math classes, because those are not necessarily fun classes to teach. We cannot guarantee that our students are coming in with the foundation that they need. And a lot of times the students are embarrassed to go and ask a tutor or ask their instructor, you know, how to do things like multiply fractions. So they're recording everything with an Adesso CyberPad. It's a pad that's about $200. You can write with a real pen and real paper. And they go through and they do their math segments. They're all very short, and we're going to make them available to all students in Moodle. We also use this to create tutorials for our faculty so that when they ask us a question, I don't have to answer it more than once. We'll publish it online, and they love that. We're starting to create a video library. Because it's so easy, I can just turn it on, record an answer, turn it off, send it to them. They like that. It's easier. Maybe that will cut down on my email, but I doubt that. This is pretty cool. This is in a dynamics class, which is a very difficult class to teach. It's another one of the barrier classes. And what this instructor does is uses a visualizer to capture. And the hardest thing's always been, what do? You bring a camera in, point it at the board, you get a picture of an instructor writing a bunch of stuff on the board. What she's been doing is experimenting with using the visualizer to lecture, and you get the drawings here. And then she'll make them available to her students to review in real time. So this is sort of a unique way that we've been using Relay, I think, with the visualizer. and it's worked well. We do capture some entire classes. In certain cases, we offer the distance learning students, in addition to their Moodle course, we'll offer them the ability to listen to a captured lecture from a face-to-face class, or we'll capture lectures that if, especially for grad classes and school management, if you need to do a lot of traveling, it's hard to get your degree sometimes, so we'll give them the ability to capture that. And finally, this is really pretty cool. This is for medical informatics, and he'll play little movies and capture the movies with Relay while he talks about them. So this is an MRI scan. The next one shows like how the MRI dissects little slices of your head and then shows it. And then he'll show and discuss this, and then he'll go to another video where he'll show the actual slide and where that is in relationship to your face. And these are all short segments that he puts online. So this is sort of some of the stuff we've been doing. So,
hi, my name is John Morris. I'm from Drexel University in Philadelphia. Now for something entirely different. Basically, I'm going to talk about our system, and then eventually I'm going to talk about Relay and how it actually added some significant improvements and then fill the gap in what our system had. Okay, what I want to talk about first is, you know, sort of what drove us to sort of get into the media business and the rich media business. Well, since about 1995, we've been capturing video, audio, and we had, as of about 2005, about 15,000 hours of content, a large base, content base. But the problem was that there was no management of that content. It was basically lying on a server, lying in a, you know, on a file server with a media server in front of it, and people had to remember where it was and where their links were to it. So given that, we really needed to empower the individuals, the individual instructors, individual authors, to get at their own materials, to manage their own materials, and not have our online learning team or our IT staff have to be able to manage that. Plus, we wanted to be able to expand it even further. So, and as the time went along, we also needed to deal with issues like security, copyright, and access issues too. So I want to talk about a product that we put together initially. We now call it Drag and Drop. We are the Drexel Dragons. Well, Welsh Dragon is our theme. It's not Drag, D-R-A-G, and Drop. It's Drag and Drop. So this was initially a response that we put out in 2006. We released a pilot of this. We just released our second version about a week ago. And the purpose of Drag and Drop was to give faculty the ability to go ahead and upload content, to be able to define how they wanted that content to be encoded, to put that content into a format that would allow them to get at that content in a very, very simple way, and basically take it away from the IT staff from handling all of this content, and to go back and grab that content that they had in the past and go ahead and manage that content too. So I'm going to show you a couple of just screenshots of what drag and drop is. Basically, there's an upload area. There's everything that's published in drag and drop is published into playlists. Now, most especially, you know, all our Millennium students and everybody else, they all know what playlists are. They're basically aggregation of the content. So think of a playlist, and some people will think of a playlist as a reusable learning object. Some people will think of it as just a list. Okay, but the fact that it's a playlist, one, it's relatively understandable. Two, it comes out in HTML. Three, it's dynamic. And four, there's an RSS link that basically represents the same thing, so it's syndicatable. So in a very, very simple system, all one has to know is know where to get the RSS link or know where to get the HTML. All the playlists and the content in the playlist can be moved around. It can be shared with other people in the institution. It can be moved from playlist to playlist. It can be copied from playlist to playlist, but it's all dynamic. There's no real, it's all links. It's all referential. There's also a media access. So content comes in, and it's in a piece of media. It's an object. It could be a video. It could be a PDF file. It could be a small website with an index.html file. It can be video, audio, graphic files. It can be external links to external content. So the playlists are really just aggregations of almost any kind of content that you can throw into the system. Once content is put in the system, particularly if it's being encoded, it's going to be tracked in the system. You're going to watch it move through the system because it has to go to an encoder to be processed, and that will include the content from Relay. So as it moves through the system, because we allow somebody to encode multiple into multiple formats at one time, we have a large farm of encoders in the back end. Piece of content will come in. It'll be, if it's three or four different places or three or four different types of encoding that's necessary, it'll simultaneously be encoded in all different encoders and then be published to our back-end system. The faculty member or the instructor will be sent an email giving them the URL to both the item and to the playlist in which it's initially put. One of the significant things about the system is we allow surrogate users. So if I'm a faculty member and I want my TA to do it, the faculty member can set it up and say, okay, John Doe is my surrogate, and therefore they can come in and do all the things that I get credit for, which is not a bad idea. Okay, we also have a little built-in mini capture. So you can come to the interface and capture audio, capture video. It's not meant to be, you know, big classroom capture, though. If you want to, you can take a camera, turn it around, and capture a classroom, but that's not what it's meant to be. One, it's in Flash, so it's a Flash capture. It's not an MPEG-3 or an MPEG-4, and there's some issues about that. But let's say I want to do something really quick, really dirty. You know, I want to capture 2 or 3 minutes that I want to send to my students. Boom, you're in the system, and these are the interfaces of what the faculty member or author sees. Okay, so Why did we do this? Okay. So, one, nearly any kind of video, almost any kind of audio can be ingested in. We take all the Microsoft Office files. We can turn them into PDFs. We can do text-to-speech. We ingest all the graphic file types or the major graphic file types that we don't do any graphic file conversion. We have what we call DragonCast, which I can pick up my cell phone, call a number, and leave a podcast. We can take internally or externally encoded stuff. Though I went into Camtasia and I've already encoded into a Flash or a Windows Media object. Those can be ingested also, so you don't have to necessarily encode within our system. And you can do external links to external content. As I said, all the playlists are rendered as HTML and RSS feeds. So, and that's particularly nice because you can drag the RSS feed, just drag the icon right into iTunes, and anything that's iTunes compatible, PDF, MPEG-3, MPEG-4 automatically be syndicated. One of the interesting features, though, is that you can put security on a playlist. You can put a login and a password. That also goes to the RSS feed. So if you drag that RSS feed over, it will also ask you for a login and password. It's a little unusual. It's sort of outside of the general specs of RSS feeds. One of the other interesting thing is you can, anybody use Empatica in here? Okay, there's a few. Empatica is it's an application, Mac or PC, that allows you to take PowerPoint slide presentations, particularly voice annotated. You know that they grow very large. It shrinks them down into a very, very, very small package, provides an HTML file and a JAR file. And usually people take those files and they upload them, let's say, into their system. Well, if you rename the HTML file as index.html, put it in a folder, zip up the folder, you can zip the whole sign. You could also have your own little website that you've produced, and as long as it has an index.html file, put it in a folder, zip it up, send it up, and now that's in the system. So the system is really designed to handle almost any kind of media and aggregate into playlists. Web-based, cross-platform, it's an ASP model, meaning that multi-institutions can make use of the application. We are an ASP provider to 7 other schools with Blackboard Vista. We also support other schools with SCT Banner. We also support other schools by sending our IT staff out to those schools. So we're very entrepreneurial relative to that. Also, one of the things that I didn't mention yet, and is on this slide, is that there's extensive metadata for each one of the both playlists and with each individual object that can be uploaded. There's a whole tagging system that can be searched, and on both the media slide and on the playlist panel, You can search for your content. It will search across the institution. If playlists can be made shareable across the institution, so it will actually search for other media that other people will produce based on the keywords that you've entered. And if you've made it shareable, you're saying that I'm making it, allowing somebody to take a piece of media out of my shareable playlist and use it in my playlist. Okay, so why all the trouble? In the 2 years from 2006 to the beginning of 2008, nearly 17,000 objects were created in the system by our faculty. We have about 16,000 students. We have about 800 full-time faculty. That level of input was done by about 200 faculty. Also, our HR uses it, so it's not just faculty. So we've opened it up to all faculty and staff. We don't open it up to students. The latest version, particularly with the Relay allows you to have guests in, and that will provide our link for the students. Yeah. So it has been for us a significant boom in terms of putting it into the faculty hands. But, and I'll get to that in a second. So what are people saying? And I'm not going to go through all this stuff on this slide, but generally speaking, everybody is extremely positive. You know, it's allowed them to do ad hoc things that they've never been able to do before, and that's really a significant thing. So what are they saying relative to why they use it? Because they want ad hoc content. They want to be able to put it in their own hands. They want to be empowered. Faculty want to be empowered. Okay. On the other side of the equation, would I use it again and continue using it? We've done a number of surveys over the last couple of years, and it's a resounding yes. So, in summary, what is it? It's basically a soup to nuts kind of Swiss Army knife for publishing and encoding. But if you look at the last thing on this slide, what we were missing was an ad hoc way of doing any kind of capture. We do a tremendous amount of live capture and on-demand capture anyway. We use MediaSite, we use RealProducer, we use products on the Mac, products on the PC. We capture video conferences. We do about 40 hours of that a month. We do about 80 hours of regular live capture a month. So we use all kinds of alternatives. One thing we don't have is something that we could have put in the faculty hands that would sort of front load our system. And that got us to Relay. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time in talking about Relay because everybody's already showed you what it can do. But in reality, what it does for us is empowers the faculty member to do their ad hoc capture. The content goes to the Relay server. We were a beta with TechSmith, and based on our relationship, some connections were made in XML that allowed us to publish to our system. We pick up the XML, we pick up the file. If it's already encoded by Relay, we pass it through the system and publish it. If it's not, we have our own encoding templates that a faculty member can choose. It's published in our system, and the email is sent. So we have a very open API relative to that. We're also doing things with Wimba and others to ingest their content. But this is a significant improvement to our system, which basically gives us complete soup to nuts, ad hoc capture anywhere, and ad hoc publishing, and a very, very sort of keep it simple system. So, and I think that is pretty close.
One thing, the question was about digital rights. We do not have digital rights management per se. That's an interesting argument around campuses. But what we do is that because we built the front end and interfaces ourselves, we actually have a gateway to content. So if a piece of content is not meant to be shared, and you would think you could take that URL and give it to somebody else, you can't. Because that URL only lasts for about a few minutes. So there's time dependency there, so there's no URL sharing, there's no downloading. You can define when you create a playlist, you can set a Creative Commons a copyright notice as part of that playlist. There's security, you can put a login and password against the playlist. So we identified initially four different things that really meant security. And part of the reason was that the library was giving us DVDs, I think over the last year or so,
We have probably converted on the order of 75 to 100 major movies that they had in their collection. They would have a single DVD. But they had the rights to distribute, and they got the, they had the right rights, but they had no way to do it. So basically we ingested it into the system, and then you put the controls around it.
You know what's really cool? The difference is that Camtasia Studio does all the, you know, recording, capture, has the plug into PowerPoint. You can edit. You do all that stuff on your desktop, and then you have to choose settings to publish, and the file comes on your desktop, and then you've got to do something with that. I didn't mention this, or none of us did, but the Relay doesn't require you to have Camtasia Studio. It comes with its own client, and when you buy it, basically you get Mac and PC clients for as many machines as you want to put on them. That isn't where the licensing is. But what it can do is you can actually, one of the recording options is a CamRec file. If you're familiar with Camtasia, that's the file it makes. So you could go ahead and create an MPEG-4 and an MPEG-3 or something else and a CamRec file so that you've got a way to also have a backup and an editable file. So you can grab that file, bring it into Camtasia Studio, edit it. When you're done, and I didn't know this at first when I was in the beta, and then somebody on the list mentioned something about it. I go, what are you talking about? Well, if you have Relay and then you have Camtasia Studio on your machine, when you're done with Camtasia Studio and you go to publish, one of the options is back to Relay. And the cool thing about it is, with Relay, we've built profiles for the faculty. So it'll say, you know, Kevin's History 1010 class. So all I have to do as a faculty member is choose Kevin's History 1010 class. I don't need to worry about what the output is, what the format is, what the file size is. It does it for me. So from Camtasia Studio, you can publish back in. Did that answer? Was that a little bit longer answer, but did that answer? Yeah. Right, simple, easy to capture. And when you're done capturing, you can edit with Camtasia Studio if that's what you need to do. Yeah. There is a table of There is a table of contents that you can generate with it. If you're doing PowerPoint, it'll pull those slides out and do a table of contents. And that's with the Flash player. Is that if you do the Flash version of the player, it will do that. At least that much.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
But that's still metadata. I mean, it's still, you still have to. Yeah, the ubiquitous anonymous, you don't know you're being captured. Well, the answer, to try to get the answer to the second question, yes, maybe. There's certainly pushes from either department levels and all to capture everything. I personally believe in artifacts. You know, that's if we capture the artifacts, we may not use them all the time. But if we capture them, we still have them. If we don't capture them, it's gone. We lose them. And so I think that that's the first. Now, the first question, can you restate it again for me?
Yeah, the individual material, since they can't be seen to say, the big class, which is called the first students, got quite a mystery.
Yeah.
And those also have quite a mystery, and students, child, themselves, as far as I don't, if you're clever enough, maybe you'll come up with the college, but sometimes you just forget all of it.
You can pause the recording?
Yeah.
That was, yeah. Well, yeah. The other side is that you save it as a camera. The profiles that you can do in Relay allow you to save it or encode it in more than one way at a time. So you may save it as a camera so that you could go into Camtasia Studio, cut out the silence part, you know, add a few tags to it, put a front end on it, put a back end on it, and do those kinds of things. At the same time, you also just put it up as an MPEG-4 because you know, half the class got snowed in, and they're sitting out there. They don't care that there's a 5-minute silence. They can move it ahead.
Yeah, most of them are so grateful to have something that they don't care about the post-production so much. That's sort of secondary. A lot of them speed it up and listen to it anyway. And one other thing about archiving, which is really nice about this, is you can have the uncompressed file, which becomes your archival master. And if you decide that you no longer can afford the server or something, you can still access those files, because a lot of the lecture capture systems, if your contract expires, you lose sort of the ability to go back and access all these materials that are really yours. With this, you don't have that issue. The other really nice thing is that when we went to iTunes U, we have Archival Master, so we were able to just repurpose it for the flavor of the month, so to speak. And you have that ability with this, whereas using some of the things like Empatica or we used to do a lot of things with Real Presenter, you end up with very proprietary end results that are difficult to repurpose down the road.
Thank you.
In this one, there is a guest login, so if somebody walked in and I didn't have an account on the machine, or they can actually capture, and then it says upload and decide later, so there is options for that to happen. So if I got here and, oh no, I don't have a login, I can record, get it up there, then work with the system admin or whoever has GUI interface access, which can be multiple people, to deal with that. The other cool thing about it is, if I do capture, I can actually go to the web page of the server as a user, not as an administrator's user, and go into the GUI and actually see the status of my lectures and that kind of stuff. So there's some pretty cool options for that
kind
of thing.
This also hooks to LDAP.
I'll tell you an experiment I did once the system got up to a point where we wanted to actually try it with faculty. There was a bunch in IT that tried it. This summer we had a two-day workshop come to campus, and it was on food preservation. So we had a variety of speakers coming in from different areas with their PowerPoint slides, and some didn't have PowerPoint slides. Hooked up a USB microphone to the room, and the room had it had a projector, and that was about it. So we had a laptop from the professor, and we hooked it up. I showed this professor who was running it how to do it. I left. Okay, so I showed him how to record, which is real simple, and how to stop. I went back to my office. And I set myself up to get the emails when these things were published so I could watch and see what was going on, and I was monitoring the server because we were going to have one presenter right after the other all day long for 2 days. And there were two little problems we had. One, there was one that for some reason got started and then somehow it got stopped within a few seconds. And then one of them didn't get audio, okay, of 2 days. What happens is you got to make sure you the only gotcha, and it's not a gotcha if you've got, I was coming in USB, so it obviously, it defaults to the line in or mic in thing, and somehow that got changed over lunch or something happened. I didn't get audio on one of them, okay? But there's a meter there. If you do it right, when you go there, you can test it. You'll see the meter, and that's critical, and that's, as I train faculty, I say, okay, you go here, choose your audio, test it, talk. Make sure you're seeing audio, then hit the record button, and you're good to go. Other than that, everything else has been really, really, smooth. The other thing I've liked about it, I sit home. I have Comcast internet, wireless in my house. I sit home, have recorded some things, some little short things, hit the button. It just works. It works from your hotel room. I was testing it before another presentation I did. It just works. No matter where you are, it just works. That's what's cool.
And I think another significant thing is that if you're in IT, we're constantly being asked to do more with less. Our budgets are being cut and all. This is one of those things that when you look at the number of hours, I assume that every time we have to touch something, that's about a half an hour. If somebody gives us a DVD, a CD, or something like that. Just in our pilot, I say a quarter of a person year. In that 17,000 objects that were there, there are person year savings there that I couldn't have put the staff on. When you add this now on top of it, because we used to go out to the classrooms like a lot of you. You build classrooms and all of that kind of stuff. You put the technology in the classroom. You had to send people out and you had to be able to sort of monitor and take care of it. Here, now let's get the IT out of it. We'll do the servers and we'll manage there and put it back in the hands of the faculty. Yeah.
In the earlier part of the presentation, you indicated that focus groups and such, the students only want the visuals and the audio. Is that supported by research of some sort, or is it the same opinion among all of you? Or even the faculty that also sometimes they need to have a video in there?
What we normally try and do, we do have a studio. So if it's for a distance learning course, what they'll do is they'll come in, record an introduction with their face. They'll make that connection, and then we stick to what they want to see, which is the visuals. Would you rather see someone pull up a video of the MRI scanning the head and slicing the head, or would you rather look at David Loveliner as he talks?
Well, I totally agree.
So I think
there is some research.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah. It says that the video, the talking head adds a little bit, adds the sort of acculturation part of it, but it's a relatively small part of the overall learning experience. In some cases, though, it may be all you have.
That's what you have. Yeah. And you can record video with this if you wanted to open a window and bring it into the whole screen, because it captures the whole screen, and I've tested that. It works. You could bring a document camera in via, a VJ to USB or whatever, put it up in the corner of the window, it'll capture it, and then if you needed to drag it, it will do that. It adds more.
But it's not part of the actual template that makes it easy to start. It's about
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I have a question.
ASP model is very simple. We basically will charge for bandwidth and storage. The application is there. There'll be a setup fee that's all of our business and authentication is outside the system. So there's a setup fee to set up your LDAP or whatever your login is. But all you're going to do is send out trusted information to our system. If people aren't in our system and you trusted them, when it gets to our system, it automatically creates them in the system. Everything institutionally is separated, but it's not. So in other words, eventually, I'd like to have everybody sort of be very nice and have a cross-institutional sharing too. It's a lot of times, but that it's basically a model based on bandwidth and storage. Yeah.
I think that's
actually
both the media site and campaign before the end.
Oh yeah. Well, the media site stuff is about as ubiquitous as possible because the way we have it set up, the faculty have no idea what's going on. We monitor everything and do everything remotely. We don't go out to the classrooms. In the classrooms that we have, in fact, the media site boxes are not even in the classrooms. We have ways of getting content across the internet, both video and audio and textual content across that we go into what we call our master control, and then we share boxes because it's too expensive to take a $22,000 media site box and put it into 50 classrooms. You know, maybe that's just, you know, so put it back there. Should I answer that? There's two ways to do it. One, obviously, you install the client. The client is very, very thin, very, very small. The other option is that in the not too distant future, TechSmith will be coming out with a USB device that has Relay on it, the client on it. Just plug it in, good to go. So that takes care of that. Yeah, back there.
What if you all settle on the optimal data range for the
competition? Oh my gosh.
That's a loaded question. It's really a loaded. You know, iPods. It's if you're dealing with, I have found very good luck. 640 by 480, which is the iPod standard now for the iPod Touch and iPhone, and it's about 10 to 15 frames per second you can do as it creates that. That has worked very, very well. I actually find, I don't have any research to back this up, but based on our experience of faculty doing videos themselves and putting up in course management systems, a lot of times those are very big and really loaded files, huge. And sometimes they put them up there and then students can't access them, so they've got to recompress them and do it again because our help desk gets all. I see this thing actually reducing the amount of bandwidth we will use just from the fallout of that.
What we've done in the past, well, let me answer that. What we've done is rather than trying to force that at times, because usually when you're talking about bandwidth, you're also talking about resolution. And so what we do is we give them the option. We say low quality or low bandwidth. And so they can build a template that says, give me a low bandwidth MPEG-4, give me a high bandwidth MPEG-4. That way they're both published at the same time. That way if I'm on a low, you know, bandwidth connection, I can at least get something. Okay, and certain ones like with Real, you can do variable bandwidth. So, you know, each format has some goods and bads associated with it, but we've been pushing the multi-format or the multi-bandwidth idea for a very, very long time, and that sort of solves that particular problem.
I like what you did with the visualizer. I think that would be very nice. On the other hand, I'm picturing most of your technology that you can visualize from your switches and the field with the bandwidth. So,
we're struggling now with the visualizer issue because what we do is we have two options basically. The visualizer would go in through the USB port, and we realized some of the computers that we delivered to the classrooms were so old that they didn't have USB 2 cards. So they actually wouldn't work with the visualizer, which was one bump that we found out, but that was sort of a reflection on the technology that we have. So either we're going to deliver a cart with the visualizer attached, and that just plugs right into the projector in the room. We hit record, it's done. That, or they could get a visualizer on a cart delivered to specific rooms. They just plug it in USB to their computer, they do the capture, and it's done.
some alternates to that again are...
Well, no, it goes from the visualizer plugs into the computer, and then what happens is they use the visualizer software to pull it up on the computer, and anything on the computer gets captured. So it's just this: if you can view it on your computer, you can capture it, basically.
Yeah, another option is to use the Smart Tech Symposium, which is basically a touch board, or use a Smart Tech, you know, touch boards. They're whiteboards. We use a lot of those, an awful lot of those. You're basically capturing everything that you do, right? Everything you write, and either on the board. So some people like to be at the podium and write on there. Some people like to go to the board.
Yes, part of our faculty distribution program this year, we've purchased a number of, or we're trying to purchase, there's out to bid, a number of tablet PCs, so that the faculty in the departments that typically have had a hard time with this, math and science, could get a tablet PC that we are ideally going to have them all use Relay, and
go out there and use it. Our CS department uses tablet. Their faculty all use tablet PCs to do all their courses. Okay.
Perhaps this is very obvious, but my IT staff is going to see this as a huge burden. I don't know. It sounds like you have to have different user accounts or something when they're logging in. So my question is, how difficult is it to set up? You don't seem very stressed out about this.
No, not at all. We hooked up our drag and drop to LDAP. We hooked up Relay to LDAP and sing LDAP. And in a couple minutes, they'll hook them up. It's almost a no-brainer thing. My goal is to reduce my IT staff time. I mean, it's a tremendous, tremendous burden because we're always asked to do more and more and more. So we're finding that we're providing more services with less time. Okay. Do you have to have buy-in? The drag and drop system is not a little system. We're the upstairs people. It was my staff and my skunkworks who actually built the system. It wasn't the downstairs people who live in the caves. Okay, yes, you have to have a SQL Server behind it, you got a server farm behind it, you got all of this stuff that you have to have, but theoretically, once it's up and running, you've got redundancy and you've got all the things going. Our staff, my staff becomes the help desk, it becomes the assistants. Our online learning team helps the faculty pedagogically to use it and stop thinking about the technology. This is just another piece of technology that they can put into play.
Just using Relay, for example, our IT people are spread very thin, and they're in the middle of a huge migration project. They actually like Relay, and I think that's a reflection of the fact that they don't have to do anything. They literally just install it on a box, hook it up to LDAP, and keep their fingers crossed that we don't lose power to the machine room. That's basically it. From the instructional side of the house, we can create the accounts. That's something that we can do, so we don't need to use our IT people. So basically just getting it installed is the only thing they need to do, and they were able to do that.
So you're creating those accounts on these companies?
Yes.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
On the PC, it's AVI file, and on the Mac, it's
MOV.
It's an MOV?
Yeah.
I've actually never gone and looked, per se, because I haven't had to worry about it, but yeah.
There was.
Do you have a URL for the drag and drop?
Yeah, I'll come up, grab a card, and I'll make sure you get that. Any other questions?
What you'll find as you start playing with it is you realize that 99% of your profiles are all going to be the same. Once you decide how you're going to publish, for 99% of the time, it's going to be exactly the same. And then there'll be those 5% maybe that you need to do something special because it's for a different type of project.
Yeah, it's interesting. In the first system, the first version of drag and drop, we had very fixed profiles. High bandwidth, low bandwidth, the strip off and MPEG-3 synchron. Now, in the new system, we've got user definable profiles plus global profiles.
we're waiting to see right now where people migrate, but we're already telling them that the future is MPEG-3 and MPEG-4 and Flash.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Real Networks enables digital delivery of distance learning coursework, athletic events, and more to students anywhere. Information at realnetworks.com.